Today on Seculo, CNN in chaos over Kamala's disastrous town hall.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, folks, welcome to Seculo. We are taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. 12 days out from Election Day, millions of early votes are coming in across the country in states that have early voting. Make sure you know the rules about when your early voting comes to a close. If you're planning to vote that way, again, you're voting in a traditional way. You're waiting in line. You're voting at the same machine you'd be voting on Election Day. You're probably just able to do it in about a third of the time. Though we are seeing some reports of pretty long lines and long waits, depending on what time of day you go. So try to use these days and plan when is a good time to go, that you can commit like an hour, hour and a half to voting, to making sure that you've got your vote in, and then you can spend the time, again, dealing with whatever other issues come up in your life. And also, if you want to spend time trying to help other candidates and campaigns, you've got the time to do that and help get out the vote for the candidates that you support. And we're hearing it's not just going on in battleground states, but, you know, we had Ted Cruz on yesterday about Texas, about how close that race is for U.S. Senate. I mean, it's you know, right to the wire. And remember, Ted is not getting the benefit of a lot of the national spending by like the Trump campaign or the RNC, because that's not a toss-up state for President Trump or Kamala Harris. So all of the funding he has got to provide himself, and the Democrats are pouring it all in just trying to see if they could somehow, you know, the Senate map doesn't look great for them, so they'd have to flip some of these fairly difficult Senate seats to flip. So they've targeted him again. I mean, it feels like every 6 years they target Ted Cruz. So don't just pay attention and say, well, I'm not in one of those battlegrounds that I hear about all the time, so my votes are not as important. Remember, nobody wins if we don't go and show up and vote. And the other side does, and then their people can win. And they can win at the local level, the city level, the state level, federal level, and national level if we don't go show up and vote. And it doesn't matter, again, if you do it early or if you do it, again, on Election Day. That's fine, too. But I do like people going in early, especially the R kind of listeners. I think you've made up your mind. You know the issues. But if you haven't, maybe you tuned in last night to yet another Harris town hall, which I will tell you, when you're 13 days out, which is where she was yesterday from Election Day, and you're still going on CNN to answer hour and a half of questions from Anderson Cooper about basic stances on policy, like the economy, and you can't figure out how to get a straight out economy message, well, those CNN commentators and journalists are no longer going to carry the water for you when you're now 13, now 12 days out from the election, because they're not going to say, well, everybody said on CNN that everything was fine, and then we lost. So they're going to start now coming out and being a little bit more, I'd say, picky and a little bit more realistic and honest about the performance of Harris. And we saw that right away, Will, from Dana Bash.
That's right. And we'll play it when we get back from the break, because she honestly had the demeanor that was very reminiscent of the demeanor of the team on CNN after that Joe Biden Donald Trump debate, right, the one that caused Joe Biden to ultimately drop out of the race. And just hearing the commentators and anchors that were on there, they were not pleased with the performance of the vice president. And they also, as you mentioned, it seems like they are not willing to look like in 12, 13 days from now, be the ones that their credibility falls because they didn't tell people, wait, something could be amiss here, because she's not really answering questions.
Yeah, they'll blame the candidate, which honestly, I mean, that's who gets the blame, because they are up on the stage answering the questions. It's not at that point, your staff can't help you. Your team really can't help you. You've got to be able to carry the message. It's not good when you're 2 weeks out and you still are trying to figure out what your economic policy is. We want to take your calls, your questions, your thoughts. 1-800-684-3110. Have you voted early? Are you going to vote early? And some states don't have it. Some states only allow mail voting. So there's all this different kind of voting going on around the country. But we want to hear from you. 1-800-684-3110. A lot to talk about today. And Tulsi Gabbard joining us as well. to Seculo. So we are going to take your calls. A lot of people calling in, so we'll get those up. We'll take them throughout the show today. But I did want to play. So we talked about CNN and Harris on CNN, and I wanted to start with kind of remember that CNN panel, if she had done well, would have been jumping up and down, praising the performance, saying this was what we needed from Harris. She's finally sealing the deal, telling about the issues. She's talking about what she would do differently. You know, she's not afraid to say, yeah, well, you needed some border wall. I've figured that out over the last 3.5 years that it's not going to be able to do it all without putting some more barriers in place. But instead, she won't even say that directly. She'll imply it, but it's something that even the commentators will say, and we'll get to it as well, which is that you can't just say over and over again that you're not going to change any positions. You can't always hold your ground. You've got to kind of concede something that you've learned as vice president that may have, again, if you're going to come out with a policy difference and run ads about showing all these border walls, that you got to come out and say, yeah, I do support building more of the border walls. And here's how it's different, that I'd like to do it different than President Trump. You could say that, or the areas I'd like to focus on, or where I think it needs to be versus maybe not as much. But you can't just say, whatever it takes, I support to secure the border, because that's not an actual policy position. That's just words. And again, I want to go to Dana Bash first, because Dana, again, is a reporter. At the end of the day, her credibility lies on how she analyzes interviews that she does and these town halls that she analyzes while and watches. And when you get 12 days out, and they were 13 days out yesterday, but within 2 weeks of the election, it doesn't really matter where their politics fall, because their careers are also judged by, are they just being honest brokers about what they just watched? Or are they going to try and tell you that you didn't actually see what they saw, and it's somehow, however you saw it, was incorrect? They're not doing that anymore. So I think the gloves are off when it comes to at least places like CNN. MSNBC is sold out so far to the left. I think they would just... They wish Kamala Harris was even more liberal. So I'm not sure that, again, they're going to get a lot of criticism there, except criticism from the left coming a different way. But take a listen to Dana Bash, because, again, they are looking at their own careers. Now we're 12 days out, and when someone's having to do a town hall like this, you either close the deal or you don't. Take a listen.
I'll just tell you what I'm hearing from people who I have been talking to, and that is that if her goal was to close the deal, they're not sure she did that. And, some people have asked, is she being held to a different standard? Maybe. But that's maybe the world that she's living in. And on the question of who she is, people are understanding that a little bit more. But what she will do, the question about her legislative priorities, name one, there wasn't one. Some more of her personality and her sort of character questions about your weaknesses or what mistakes did you make? Not necessarily the answers there.
No legislative priorities. The one time she started off the question about a weakness, it was like, well, I like to really kick the can on issues. I like to really get in the weeds and get all the sides on issues and make sure that we're really well informed. But I actually see that as a strength. Well, that's not a weakness then. I mean, you're not answering the question. You can come up with weaknesses, by the way, that, and we were talking about this last night, that are still not like, again, so bad. Your weakness can be that I'm so committed to these things. And so, sometimes I've got kind of, 20, that my vision is locked in on the goal, and I've got to make sure that I go to my team and we're not missing the small things, trying to get to the bigger goals. Or, I'm so focused on this issue right now that I always have to, always have to remind myself as vice president that it's not just that issue. I'm not just a senator anymore worrying about a state and worrying about issues that come forward as legislation. No legislative priorities? I mean, what do you want to do? First of all, in half the interviews, when it comes to abortion priorities, we'll talk about later, she knows that she wants to take away the conscience protections. So I guess she doesn't want to call that a legislative priority. I thought she wants to reinstate Roe as law. I thought you could say that's a legislative priority. I don't want to answer these questions for Democrats, but what I'm saying is you don't have to be that polished or great of a politician if you've made it that far up to answer questions from an audience. That's not Anderson Cooper pushing. That's just audience questions, the basic questions that I think people used to get when you'd apply for a job. Now, I don't know if they ask you the weaknesses question anymore, because these kids coming out of school today, probably, you know, you can't handle that question and you get HR coming after you. But the idea is that you can answer that question, and a weakness doesn't always have to be such a bad thing. It could just be like, yeah, I can be obsessive over, you know, perfection, and then sometimes you miss the small things. So I've got to have a team around me that makes sure I don't miss the small things. Well, that doesn't sound so bad, does it? But it is a weakness. That would be a weakness. Other people are all big picture, right? And I think that, you know, some people like Trump, they like to be involved in every single thing. And that's difficult too, because if you're involved in every single thing, once you think that you've gotten that thing done as president, like he said before, and you've put out the order or you've put out the sign, the law, and you think it's actually getting done, and then you check a month later and the bureaucracy is still dragging its feet, and you say, what's going on here? Because you're not used to that world of Washington, where just getting it legislatively done doesn't actually mean, and signing into law doesn't actually mean it actually starts going into effect if you don't push it. So again, I don't have a lot of, and I don't think anybody does, much grace period, Will, for that. Because again, if you get to this level, those kind of questions shouldn't be difficult. Legislative priority? You're running for president of the United States and you don't have an idea of what you want to put forward in your first 100 days?
That's right. And that's why it's kind of bizarre that she won't answer some of these questions, even like the legislative priorities. It wasn't that she said, well, I have three. I'm sorry you asked for one. I'll give you three.
Right.
No, she just said, I have a lot of priorities. The vagueness, for some reason, they think attack Trump, because she called him a fascist last night.
Yeah,
so attack Trump and be vague is a winning combination.
They're one step away from calling him Hitler. And they're already pushing out articles by other people who are calling him Hitler. Now, they've called George W. Bush Hitler. We know that. I think Mitt Romney was called Hitler. Paul Ryan was called Hitler. It's a pretty broad category of Republicans.
I even saw someone post that Dewey, who was running for president against President Truman called him Hitler at one point.
Yeah.
So it goes far back that people in the Republican Party are called Hitler by Democrats. So.
Right. So instead, you know, the broader term is he's a fascist. And then we have people like John Kelly, who, by the way, I'm not to give any attorney client away, but again, these were not loyal chiefs of staff. I'll just come right out and say that. I was in enough meetings, not a ton, by the way, but enough to see the way they treated the president of the United States that it didn't make me feel comfortable. Like, if you're a chief of staff and that's how you feel like you're going to treat the president, quit. Get out. It's not the job for you. And by the way, 8 years later, coming out with how you don't like him anymore, 7 years later because you didn't get along with him and because he's too tough, and you're 3-star, 4-star generals. And by the way, you're the Joint Chiefs of Staff, but you didn't like to follow the direction of the president. And that's Hitler. It's Hitler to say that I wish these generals would follow orders. So that's what they're supposed to do with the president of the United States. They give him advice and options. You know, that's what the president usually comes and say, what are the options here to handle this problem? Okay, this is the one we like, but we could also do this, 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 or this. And sometimes they disagree even amongst the different branches of the military. And if the president does say okay in that meeting, let's go with that option B, the military at that point is supposed to put that into motion. Now, they can still say as they're putting into motion, just keep updating the president to make sure they want to keep doing that. You know, you have those meetings. But you don't just come out and say, well, he tried to just tell us what to do. Well, I mean, I don't think we want presidents who delegate their entire authority to run the military to the military, which is why we have a military run by by civilians, by elected civilians, is because you need people looking at it from a different perspective, not just people who are in uniform. And Will, I think on the part of this, let's play a little Harris, and then we'll when we come back, and then we'll play some Axelrod. We'll take some of your questions as well, because David Axelrod, he comes at it, you know, as a strategist, basically. Is this connecting right with voters? He's about winning and losing. So again, credibility-wise, he's not going to watch something like that this close to the election day, knowing that people have already put in millions of votes on both sides, and say that, you know, it was just great. You know, you can do that 6 months ago. You can do it 9 months ago, a year ago. But you can't do it, you know, when you're less than 2 weeks out. And I think the criticism might get tougher on Harris if she continues to be able to not articulate her views. And if you can't articulate your views, guess what happens by Election Day? Those voters don't show up and wait in line for 3 hours. So your hardcore anti-Trump support, you know, anti-Trump voters, they may have voted early. They may not care as much. But the people you got to convince still are the people that are going to go and show up early in the morning or after work or in the middle of the day while their kids are at school on their lunch break on Election Day. And they're not going to go there to vote for you if you don't give them policy positions so they know what they at least think they are voting for that person to go in and fight for. We need your support at the ACLJ. We're fighting for election integrity. We're about to launch a whole new mission on that for these final 10 days. But go to ACLJ.org today. Donate. So when we do get some actual policy or legislative proposals from Harris, and we didn't get them last night, but a couple nights ago, of course, when it comes to the issue of abortion, and this time it was conscience protections for medical providers. And we're not just talking about doctors and nurses here, even ultrasound technicians. I want to make this very real for you because this is something the ACLJ is now dealing with as of this week. So first I want to, Will's going to pitch to it because this was a couple nights ago, right? Will, this is on NBC?
Yeah, this was the NBC interview with Hallie Jackson. This is the one that Kamala Harris took the day off campaigning to prepare for. It was pre-taped and then aired during NBC Nightly News. And we actually played this yesterday, if you watched the broadcast, and we were calling out the concerns of it. And we're going to play it for a moment, in a moment. And then we're going to talk with Cece about the timeliness of her making this policy statement and how it affects people that the ACLJ represent right now. Let's go ahead and play bite two.
So is a question of pragmatism then, what concessions would be on the table? Religious exemptions, for example, is that something that you would consider?
I don't think we should be making concessions when we're talking about a fundamental freedom to make decisions about your own body.
To Republicans like, for example, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, who would back something like this on a Democratic agenda if, in fact, Republicans control Congress, would you offer them an olive branch? Or is that off the table? Is that not an option for you?
I'm not going to engage in hypotheticals because we can go on with a variety of scenarios. Let's just start with a fundamental fact. A basic freedom has been taken from the women of America. The freedom to make decisions about their own body. And that cannot be negotiable. Which is that we need to put back in the protections of Roe v. Wade. And that is it.
Now, here's the thing. The protections of Roe v. Wade allowed for religious exemptions. So if she truly knew anything about these laws and really listen to her pro-abortion supporters, that's not what they're asking for. They want to go further. But in the meantime, we are seeing these issues in real time. So when she got asked that question about, hey, you know, you could probably get some votes if you allowed for some exceptions, religious exceptions for those doctors, nurses, and other healthcare employees who feel like they've got, again, a conscience objection to participating in an elective abortion procedure. Okay, that is the basic line. Right now in the United States, you do. And you can argue that. You can fight that in court and usually win. And I want to go to Cece Hub because Cece, just this week, we're hearing from three ultrasound technicians. So these, again, it's not always just doctors and nurses, but ultrasound technicians who heard from their hospital in New Mexico that they would no longer be able to assert those conscience protections, and that they would be utilized for abortions.
Yeah, so we are representing three ultrasound technicians, like you said, in New Mexico. It's a Presbyterian hospital that has traditionally never performed abortions ever. The hospital has been sold a couple times, and so now with the new owners, they have decided they're going to do abortions. They've got an abortion doctor coming in. So now this abortion doctor is requesting that ultrasound technicians be assigned to him to assist in these abortions. And again, typically as a Presbyterian hospital, there were always religious exemptions allowed. Now this New Mexico hospital has changed their policy, which is basically now going to force the ultrasound technicians to do it without a conscience exemption. And here's the thing, even, you know, we saw what Kamala Harris was going to do. She's saying we're not even allowing any exemptions, not religious exemptions, which is the conscience exemption. It's against your conscience to provide an abortion if you have Christian values and beliefs of protecting life. These laws, these conscience laws, outside of Roe v. Wade, what Kamala Harris is talking about, there are actually federal laws protecting the conscience exemptions. And so those federal laws protect this. And that's what our letter to the hospital has said. And, you know, we're saying you cannot do that. And in the Supreme Court case of FDA versus Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine, which was the mifepristone, the abortion pill law, the Supreme Court unanimously, it was an opinion written by Kavanaugh, but unanimously said, conscious rights are protected. You cannot force a doctor or a medical professional to perform an abortion, not even if you claim it's an emergency. And this is what's at stake here. We have a candidate for president saying, nope, not even those religious exemptions will be allowed.
Yeah. I mean, when I hear that, and when you think about that, again, on the one hand, it's a candidate who likes to say, not really talk about any policies. But then it's like, we could list 20 or 30 policies she has talked about. It's just, you know, she talks about them in these broad terms, like, well, really, I just want to put back in Roe, but also let's not even talk about giving any exceptions, because that's just hypotheticals, even though, as Cece just pointed out to you, that's not. Those hypotheticals that she's talking about are actual legislation and law that's also been tested at the highest levels in court and gone through the Supreme Court unanimously in place. So you'd have to repeal those to do what she wanted to do. I mean, it's not an easy step. It's not just so easy as passing some law on abortion, which is what the NBC reporter was saying, is to get this through, you'd have to make some compromises, right? You're going to have to get some votes from the other side. And she won't, again, is trying not to give anything. I think that is the problem. And that's what David Axelrod saw too, Will, in his kind of reaction to the CNN town hall, was that she will never give on anything. She never will compromise anything or admit to a change policy. And when you do that, you sound like you're just not being honest. It's like you didn't learn anything from 3.5 years as vice president to think that maybe some things we should do, or maybe you should handle differently.
That's right. And let's actually play the David Axelrod bite, because I think it's important for audience to hear from David Axelrod, the man behind President Obama's victory in 2008 and in 2012 as well. He kind of gave birth to the new Democrat Party in some ways, and as a genius political strategist. But what he's laying out here should be concerning for the campaign. But also, once again, you talk about this, she is so set in her ways, saying, no, you can't even object. You can't use your First Amendment right to object because of the right to abortion that they claim exists. Yeah. So I think it's important to hear about David Axelrod and her take on not conceding anything, Bite 14.
The things that would concern me is when she doesn't want to answer a question, her habit is to kind of go to word salad city. And she did that on a couple of answers. One was on Israel. Anderson asked a direct question, would you be stronger on Israel than Trump? And there was a 7-minute answer, but none of it related to the question he was asking. And so, you know, on certain questions like that, on immigration, I thought she missed an opportunity, because she would acknowledge no concerns about any of the administration's policies. And that's a mistake. Sometimes you have to concede things. And she didn't concede much.
And that's what we're talking about. It doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat. You know that you're going to learn how I could better get policies through or better accomplish what I want to do after 3.5 years on a job like that. And so you should be able to make some concessions. And it doesn't show signs of weakness. It actually shows that your brain is working and that you're thinking through the big issues that you have to take on if you are president of the United States of America, which is a lot different than being vice president of the United States of America. But at least when you're vice president, you should be able to see that in action, learn from it, and then be able to get that message out in an effective way. And again, Never a good sign when you're doing town halls less than 2 weeks before an election. That's just the truth politically, either side of the aisle. Now it's 12 days away and our rights are under attack. You heard it from Harris. No conscience protections for medical providers. No exceptions on faith when it comes to the life of the unborn. We're already representing three medical professionals. Donate today and support our work. We're also doubling down on election integrity at ACLJ.org.
Keeping you informed and engaged. Now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
I will say, at least Anderson Cooper asked the questions that even Democrats want some answers on. I think one thing about Harris is that, you know, it's one thing you can go up for a decent amount of the campaign and just make it about Donald Trump and call him a fascist, say he's like Hitler, and play a bunch of sound bites from staff that he fired. Because let me tell you, in rooms with him, he had no respect for the President of the United States, and or they disagreed with his policies, so they shouldn't have been there. And that's just it. He wasn't hiding whose policies were or who he was. And so the fact that they come out now because they're part of the Washington machine, shocking, right? I mean, why do you think it's Tulsi Gabbard is working all across the country? She'll be joining us soon on the show and is willing to do that. And these guys are just putting out statements to the New York Times. You know, it's a lot different. It's such reeks of Washington. But the second point of this is that learning issue. I mean, Anderson Cooper did ask about it, Will. Like, hey, you've been there for 4 years. Did you get anything done? Because you keep telling us about all these things that you got to do. Any accomplishments you can point to? And she couldn't. She just said, well, there's a lot of problems. Well, that's true. But anything you can point to as a success of the administration?
That's right. And we're going to, let's play Byte 17 for folks. And this is where Anderson Cooper was kind of drilling down even further, saying, why haven't you accomplished the things that you say you want to do? And she gives kind of a very Kamala Harris answer. Let's go ahead and play Byte 17.
Some voters, though, might ask, you've been in the White House for 4 years. You were vice president, not the president. But why wasn't any of that done in the last 4 years?
Well, there was a lot that was done, but there's more to do, Anderson. And I'm pointing out things that need to be done, that haven't been done, but need to be done. And I'm not going to shy away from saying, hey, these are still problems that we need to fix.
You know, I mean, need to be done, that haven't been done. I mean, again, if you wanted to start there, you could start there, but then you should be able to go in and say, but let's not forget. And I'm not saying that you can't find that somewhere on our campaign website. But voters, they're not going to your campaign website if you're not even giving them enough reason when you're talking to them directly. And I think that's the issue. Well, we can take some calls now, 1-800-684-3110. I mean, at this point, it's usually not even about deep policy issues anymore. You should kind of know, I mean, you certainly know where Donald Trump is on issues. I can't think of an issue that I don't really have a clear view from Donald Trump on. And at least I could go find it very quickly if it was one maybe I didn't pay as close of attention to, and so could you. With Harris, I just feel like, depending on where I look, I might read one thing, but then I could go the next day and it could read very differently. And that is confusing to the voter this close to the election when it's really more about retail politics now. Now it's trying to get voters out who are kind of on the fence. It's not that they don't know who they would vote for if they were voting, but are they going to spend the time and who do they like better? And not spending 90 minutes at a town hall is really, when you're not going to give them anything, doesn't make you more likable to those voters either. I mean, they're kind of saying, oh, we're still in the weeds on this stuff. I mean, we're still going through like abortion policy and we're still trying to figure out all these things about the border. And then we don't have a clear, you can't just say, this is what we're going to do or this is what I want to do and this is how I'm going to work with Congress on it and move on. But you can't if you go to Harris on that.
That's right, Jordan. And I heard it. It's almost like she's starting off from the beginning of a campaign if she were the nominee much earlier.
Yeah.
She didn't jump ahead. She didn't use the work that the Biden team had done. She's still acting like these are the first 3 months of a candidacy when maybe you do speak in broad terms and you haven't drilled down on things. But she was going to be the vice president if Joe Biden had won. And yet they're not showing enough daylight, but also still trying to distance themselves. They can't come up with a way forward, to use her terms, to actually showcase that she's a candidate at this point that's 12 days out from an election.
Yeah, it just seems like it worked for a bit. It got people excited because they were able to push Joe Biden out of the way, who they thought had no chance, not because of where he was on the issues, but because of he was what he was putting out was that he was not up for the job anymore. Age issues, mind issues, just not able to get sentences out, the debate, etc. And then they had Harris. She came in with a big, you know, DNC, but that's a big production behind you. Tulsi Gabbard's joining us next. She is from state to state, crossing the country, because she knows how important this election is. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to Seculo. From the Seculo team, Tulsi Gabbard joining us now. And Tulsi, one thing is I think that is great is that we, I know everybody watching the show, listening to the show right now, is seeing you across the country at your own events, at events with President Trump. Thousands of people are coming out when you're hosting events, when you're with President Trump. And of course, where are you next? We know you were in Georgia last night. Do you know where you're heading next?
I'm actually, you hear airplane overhead. I actually just got into Las Vegas, Nevada, where we have a couple of events today. I'll be joining Charlie Kirk at UNLV at noon for an open mic with the students there. And then this evening, we're having a huge event with President Trump that's reaching out to the Asian American Pacific Islander community out here in Las Vegas. We have some local people from Hawaii and from across the Pacific who'll be performing some music and speaking. As a lot of people in Hawaii know, Las Vegas is known as the ninth island of Hawaii because we have such a huge community here. So I'm really looking forward to it. It'll be a great, great day.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's awesome, too, that if the campaign is at a point, too, where you're able to go to voters that way, thinking about events like that, utilizing your resources that way, it's what you want to be doing. I do want to go back just a day and a half ago when you announced that you were, we know that you left the Democrat Party, but that you felt like under President Trump, the Republican Party had was becoming that big tent, welcome people in. We don't have to always agree on every single issue, but the big issues we do care about, this issues like freedom, liberty, freedom of speech, the Second Amendment, you know, taking issues again to the people, listening, that those kind of things we all agree on and that seems like are so much under attack that we've got to unite right now. And that there's a party that's actually saying, we want you to be part of us. Not that we just want you to be supporting our candidates, but we actually want to bring you inside. And you announced that you were joining the Republican Party. And I wanted to kind of get, what was the reaction that you got from people?
First of all, the reaction from President Trump was very warm and of course, as welcoming as he always has been with me. I got a lot of messages. My phone was flooded with messages, both from people who I knew, leaders in the Republican Party, people who I've never met, just very, very kind and welcoming. And I actually just got a message this morning from a woman who texted me that tears were rolling down her eyes as she watched that speech because it connected so much with her and with what so many of her friends and family have been experiencing, but haven't been able to articulate themselves. So there are those also I've seen on Twitter who are Republicans who say that there is no place in the Republican Party for people like me. This speaks to, however, the kind of healthy debate and dialogue that I think is necessary as the Republican Party goes through this and has been going through this major shift from the party of Dick Cheney, the warmongering party of Dick Cheney and George W. Bush, to now this party that is under the leadership of President Trump that fights for the little guy. It is the populist party. It is the party that under President Trump is actually fighting for peace. Now, granted, there are people in the Republican Party who disagree with that, but it doesn't take away from the fact that this has become the big open tent party that celebrates free speech and is committed to the Constitution. And the Democrat Party has devolved, unfortunately, into exactly the opposite of that.
And Tulsi, you brought up Twitter and that you saw some not welcoming necessarily messages. But I wanted to bring up anecdotally that I also was looking through Twitter and saw many posts from all over the place of independent-minded voters, probably more libertarian-leaning voters, that were dissatisfied with both parties, that had long messages about why your choice was guiding them towards the Republican Party in this election because of they trust you to speak truth to power. They trust you to be open-minded, rational thinking, and opposed to the oppressive forms of government uses, the heavy hand of government that we've seen in the past decades. And I thought that was inspiring, but I also just, it can't be lost on our listeners and on the Democrat Party of what they have lost, because you tried to be a change agent within that party. You ran for president in 2020 for that party, and the Democrat Party was so opposed to thinking, using their brain and thinking at all, I believe, that they shunned you and you left the party. Do you think it's lost on them on what a big loss they've lost by you leaving?
No, I don't think. I think that they, and then some of them have expressed this publicly, that they are quite happy to see me officially join the quote-unquote other side. I mean, look, these are the people who are celebrating and welcoming Liz Cheney and Dick Cheney, so it's no surprise to me that they're not in touch with the reality of where most people are in the country. As you said, dissatisfied with both parties, but recognizing that in this two-party system of governance that we have, there is one party that is welcoming people from all different backgrounds who have different views and ideas, one party that's standing up for free speech, the First Amendment and the Second Amendment, that's fighting for working people in this country and that's fighting for peace. And that's the Republican Party under President Trump. Under Kamala Harris, you have now the Democrat Party continuing as the party of elitist warmongers and those who are actively seeking to censor and silence people who they don't like or that they disagree with. So it is encouraging to see how people who are independent-minded thinkers like myself, I've always been that way, are recognizing that we have an opportunity here with today's Republican Party to be able to continue to build and transform this party back into its roots and its founding. And that's what's exciting to me. And again, this happened with President Trump's leadership. And I just want to point out, too, that, of course, you know, there are establishment Republicans and neocons who've been fighting Trump ever since he came down that escalator in 2015. But what matters most and what people should pay more attention to than the Washington establishment is the fact that in the last three presidential elections, the voters themselves have nominated President Trump, even when they were faced with options that, you know, may have sounded nicer or presented in a way that society deemed it more acceptable, but who represented the very same status quo Washington establishment of the power elite who care more about themselves than the people. So the people's voices are being heard, and I'm grateful to be here and to be a part of it.
You're in the military, so I wanted to ask you to respond to this because I think, you know, one, it's an attack that we've seen basically in every single election cycle. We see this from the Democrat Party over and over again, but I think more so because some of the Washingtons, I think they'd still call themselves Republicans, who... again, did not like that President Trump was not just taking all of their advice when they served him in the early days of his first administration and ended up quitting or leaving or being fired. And now he's Hitler. Now he's a fascist. And Harris is repeating that. And I know you're someone, you serve in the military, but you're also very concerned about the military being used in a way that's inappropriate. You know, to start just, as you talk about, like, warmongering, to just put more money into coffers of the machine in Washington and the kind of all of the different private contractors and the companies that are building all of the weapons, but you still serve. And this idea is, I don't think people like you would, one, even have gotten behind someone like President Trump just personally, without even talking about the Republican Party thing, if you truly believed from any of these former generals that he was a fascist or that he was somehow like Hitler.
Of course not. Of course not. I care about our country, and my love and my loyalty will always be for our country and the American people first. I've spent a lot of time with President Trump. He has always had a gut instinct to want to be in a position where he can end wars, not start them, which I've always respected, even as a Democrat in Congress. But having spent this time with him and having spent time with servicemen and women who've interacted with him either because they were injured and he went and visited them in the hospital, or he presented them with a an award that they earned because of their valor and courage in combat. These are people who recognize that in his heart, he has such admiration and respect for those who are willing to lay their lives down for our country. President Trump is the commander-in-chief our country needs right now. I would not have endorsed him, and I would not have stood with him and joined the Republican Party with him if I did not know that in my core. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. He can't do it alone. Taking on the war machine and the military-industrial complex is going to require a whole team of people who have the courage and backbone and commitment to our country. And God willing, we got to make sure he wins on November 5th. So
12 days. I know you've got the energy and the stamina to keep it up. Keep up doing what you're doing because it's making news. It's reaching voters. It's getting new people out to vote. And again, it's helping people make those decisions. And, you know, I asked that question at the end. I know that Tulsi was not going to say that, obviously. But this idea is kind of like their final attack. You know, he's Hitler, and we got John Kelly to say it. I will tell you what ripped President Trump's heart up would be those phone calls he'd have to make to young wives if their husband was killed in action, or young husbands if their wife was killed in action, and trying to bring those wars to an end, like Tulsi said, as he did. We'll be back on Seculo. All right, welcome back to Seculo. We will get to calls, but we do want to go through. I mean, there's a lot of important issues when you're 12 days out. We could get, you know, someone like Tulsi Gabbard, who's been on our team. And again, I think it's been interesting because we've been able to talk to Tulsi on these issues as she's been making these personal decisions. One, joining our team to talk to you about, you know, the issues about why she left the Democrat Party. She wrote a book about that. To you know, just a couple days ago, joining the Republican Party. And again, these are individuals who are saying, and I remember I texted Tulsi about this, that we can get inside the Republican Party now, and, you know, as some of the younger folks too, not kids, but younger side of like Donald Trump, and say, you know what, this is a way to kind of keep this moving forward in a way where we continue to add people to the party. And that is, you may have grown up the Republican Party like me and kind of transformed, as you've seen, some good and bad from the party and things that you would like differently. The wars that felt kind of endless that we kind of grew up in. I mean, I think became an adult. First time voting was around all of those kind of 9/11 and wars, and right, you know, first time voting was right before 9/11 in that very contested election that came down to, you know, hanging chads. And then we had 9/11, then we had two wars, and those wars continued, and they continued, and my generation was pretty sick of it by the time it was over. I think that the idea of like, what is the end game, which is why we say that now more quickly when we go into Ukraine with all of our money and your money, which is, get us an end game before the money starts flowing like this. If you need some kind of emergency funding because of what happened to an ally like Israel, that's one thing that we know they're an ally. They also have told us what their end game is. They want to eliminate the leadership and the organizations that support these terrorist organizations that also kill Americans. So it's a lot easier to understand. And by the way, they're not asking for us to fight the wars with them. They might ask for some financial support because we built systems with them, like the Iron Dome systems they deploy. But that's a lot different than Ukraine, where we don't have the same kind of influence 20 years from now when whoever takes whatever territories. No one can give you a great answer on that, except for Donald Trump's pretty clear. We're going to bring it to a close. That may mean that both sides don't like it, but you got to give an exit ramp to someone like Putin, who's got a nuclear arsenal and a huge military, and has shown that tough talk is not going to be enough, and sanctions isn't going to stop him. It might slow it down. Ukraine has been able to do that, but it's cost the U.S. billions and billions of dollars. It's also depleted our resources to defend our own country. So how do we get to an end game? It's not anti-Ukraine and pro-Russia to say that. You would think that's pro-Ukraine too. How do you stop having Ukrainians get killed? Not just Russians, Ukrainians too. And yet Donald Trump's the only person who will talk about that. It's like, you're evil if you're willing to even talk about negotiating an end to conflict. And that is a bad place to be. And no one wants to live in a world like that. But I think Will, too. You got a New York Times headline.
Yeah, I think with the Atlantic article that came out where John Kelly trying to liken President Trump to Hitler, I want to read a New York Times headline just to for the people to hear it. This is President likens opponent to Hitler as fascist tool. Says when bigots and profiteers get control of the country, they select front man to rule. Dictatorship stressed. And then president tells Chicago audience a Republican victory will threaten U.S. liberty. This is from an October headline of the New York Times, but not this October. This is October 26th, 1948. President Truman against Thomas Dewey. So this is a playbook.
Nazism.
This is a
very
playbook from Democrats going back to the election right after World War II, 1948, using the same verbiage. You could have swapped Vice President likens Trump to Hitler as fascist tool, and you got a headline today from the press conference she did yesterday.
Here's the truth.
Politics is on repeat.
Yes, it's on repeat. There's nothing new, usually. But what they can't really quite deal with is when you've got disruptors. They don't come along often. Donald Trump is one of them. He's not perfect under anybody's definition, right? I mean, under traditional Republicans, they're like, you know, maybe 60%, 70% there with him. Under a lot of independents, maybe they're 75, 80% because they like the fact that, you know, that other 20% of him pushes back on those traditional Republicans. And Democrats, if they were honest, if they were honest about free speech and the issues that they used to care about, like real freedom and liberty, they, I think, would be there too. But it's a personality thing with them now. They just don't like the way he talks about issues or what real freedom of speech means now, which sounds a lot more fascist to me than saying, let's open it up to ideas, including ideas you may not like. Now, we want to take some of your phone calls. We've gotten to a lot of, we've gotten deep into things. Listen, every day is going to be interesting on the broadcast leading up through Election Day because stuff's going to come out. This is when it dumps. The nasty stuff. We're not going to shy away from addressing those things like we did today. I mean, we brought it right up to Tulsi, and I thought because of her military background, she's someone who could address it in a unique way for us because she's spending so much of her time going around the country, working really hard for President Trump to get him elected, and she serves in our military. And she's someone who wants to bring wars to an end. Fascists start wars. Fascists come in to say, we're number one and we're going to go take over the world. They don't say, how can I end all these wars and bring people to peace? That is not the message I ever heard from Adolf Hitler.
That's right. Let's go ahead and take some calls right now. Patty from Maryland, ACLJ champion, you're on Seculo.
Yes. Hello. I'm actually, you're all the champions. I just support you.
No, you are the champions because we can't do our work without donors. And you know what? Our donors and our clients. I always say that. First, we have to have donors so we can have the lawyers and the teams and the to do the show. Everybody that, you know, all the different positions here at the ACLJ and ACLJ Action. But we also then have to have the clients that step up. And so without those two, we can't do our job. So you are the starting reason, Patty, of how we're here today. And you are a champion because of that.
Thank you, Jordan, but it's all for God's glory. So
definitely,
he gets the glory in this. I just came from voting in Burtonsville, and before I even walked in, they were handing out sample ballots, and I looked, and it was all filled out on the Democratic side.
Yeah.
And I said, well, aren't you taking away their choice? He said, oh, no, it's just, you know, just in case they don't remember or something like that.
Sample. So I don't know if they were violating any rules of the polling place, but in each state, jurisdictions have different rules. Where we are, I think it's 100 feet. So if you're more than 100 feet away from the door of the polling location, you can hand out partisan materials like voter guides. So I don't want to be saying, well, the Democrats and the left can't give out a voter guide because Republicans do it too. Unfortunately, you might not be seeing as much Republican info and volunteers because you're in Maryland. This is the unfortunate part of when you get down to the final days of these elections and you don't have, again, you're not going to be active in all 50 states. It's impossible to do that, and it always will be. But I will tell you this, with the Electoral College system, you're still going to be active in a lot more states than you would be if there wasn't one. So those are legal. And next time around, think, hey, you, Patty, can be outside there handing out voter guides that are exactly the opposite, as long as you're within the feet. I think it's like usually feet or yards. And those are easy to find out. And so, again, we have those kind of freedoms in America. You know, we can make it where we tell people, hey, this is how we think you should vote. I'm not against that on either side. I never want to take those rights away. I just think we have to do a better job of being everywhere we can. And that's always a part about, you know, having the resources. That's why we need you to donate to the ACLJ so we can be ready for this election integrity battle at ACLJ.org.